I suspect that we're in a minority, but there are those listening to this program who remember when we used to have our 2400 or even 1200 baud modems, maybe even a 300 baud modem. And we used to log on to our local BBS and do FidoNet and send netmail and play BBS Doors. Now, if all of that sounds like gobbledygook to you, you may want to listen to the next piece. If, on the other hand, you're saying, those were the days, well, you'll want to listen to this next piece too, because there is a new BBS that's been set up by a blind person for blind people, and it's full of BBS games, and FidoNet is there too. It's the NER BBS, and it's run by Noel Romy, and Noel joins us on the phone now. Noel, I guess, for those of us who are not veterans, let's start at the beginning and ask, what on earth is a BBS?
Well, back in the old days, and I really mean back in the old days, because this has been, BBSs have been around for years before the internet. I'll just say before the internet, probably 10 years ago, there were BBSs, and a BBS stands for Bulletin Board System. And what they would use to be is basically bulletin boards where people posted messages, different announcements for, say, their community, and stuff like that. And they were accessed with a modem. You would use your modem, call in to your favorite bulletin board, which was local, and do whatever you wanted to, post messages, play games, that kind of thing. Once the internet came online, bulletin boards died out. And it's kind of oxymoronic because, you know, I say, well, once the internet came online, bulletin boards died. In the past couple years, there's been software developed so that you can virtually act like you're using a modem as you did back, 10 years ago, and dial into bulletin board systems or BBSs all around the world and do the same thing that you could back in those days.
Yeah, they were great days, you know. I mean, it was possible to do international communication as well through networks such as FidoNet. And what the bulletin boards used to do, of course, is in the middle of the night when hardly anybody was using them, they'd kind of dial up with one another and exchange bundles of mail. And that's how people used to contact people around the world. So if you sent someone a netmail, it may well be about 24 hours before the recipient of the netmail, say if I was in New Zealand and you were in the United States, actually got the mail.
Right. The way it worked, and it's really kind of interesting because I joined FidoNet myself, and the way it was, the policy document, they're updating it because it's kind of way out of date, but the way it worked is like your bulletin board system that you dialed into, this is like before the internet, probably 15 years ago, would call a central hub, and if you really need to get a message there, they'd just call the system direct. And that hub was responsible for making long-distance calls to another hub, and this was all done what's called a zone mail hour. So for instance, in the U.S., it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. You have to keep your BBS offline if you're using a modem for an hour for transferring mail. And so that was the time when things got routed. There were, like, for instance, there's a Oceania hub. So the U.S. hub would call Oceania. And it was really quite amazing that all of this networking was done. And, I mean, it was still faster than post-mail, just regular mail.
Well, it brings back happy memories, and of course you had software like Front Door and D-Bridge and a number of other things handling those at the top. You used to log in, and often you'd know when you were on a FidoNet BBS because it would say something like, press escape to load the BBS, and you knew that you'd come into contact with a Front Door program that was monitoring the bulletin board for FidoNet purposes.
Right, and the reason why they do that is so that during ZMH, or Zone Mail Hour, the program, the front end, is will say, the bulletin board is going through zone mail hour, receiving mail, and it's down for an hour. And so that's the reason why they did that. Of course, now those programs are still widely used for dial-up systems, but for things like, internet bulletin boards, the new age type things. It's done differently.
Yeah, I'm going to try and bring this into the present because I could reminisce all day about this subject. As a former BBS is up who's gone grey-haired as a result, but I'm interested in what the predominant software is for BBSs these days, because in the late 80s and early 90s when I was involved, you had Wildcat, PC Board, Maximus, there were probably some other ones I've forgotten, Spitfire, heaps of different ones. So what are the products that are still around these days that have been kind of made internet aware?
Well, Wildcat is still big. It's kind of expensive, but they call it the Win Server, and the Win Server is it's kind of more geared toward businesses. It has a web server. It has all kinds of things that I would never use. It has Telnet server, and then of course there's all the different PC Board has a thing now that offers a Telnet server. But all of these things, you have to register your product. And then there's the kind that I use, and it's called Synchronet. And Synchronet used to be a registered product as well. And what he decided, what Rob Swindle is the guy that wrote the package, decided to do was to produce it for Windows with support for DOS programs, so that, you know, you could play games and things, have a mail server, a Telnet server, and an FTP server all in one, and offer that for free to the public. So what he has done is all you have to do now to set up a Synchronet system is download the software, configure it, and you're on the internet. Of course, it's a lot more work than that, just getting everything tweaked and stuff like that. But those are a few of the major types of bulletin board system packages that offer internet connection ability.
So why are people still bothering? I mean, you've got the web, you've got all sorts of exciting streaming media. You can presumably play pretty cool games on the web, be they graphical or text. Why are people still using bulletin boards at all?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of the pluses with bulletin boards is, well, first of all, FIDRnet is still alive and well. It's a little bit less than
how amazing
than it was before, but it is still there. And everyone that joins FIDRnet knows that the message bases on FIDRnet are a lot higher quality than, say, Usenet or something of that, because it's very regulated, and any spam or, you know, advertising that's unwelcome is not allowed. And so people, you know, it's a lot better organized message network and stuff like that. As far as the web-based games, of course, they are out there as well, but a lot of people, you know, liked, say, Trade Wars back in, you know, a long time ago.
Or, oh man,
Legend
yeah.
of the Red Dragon,
yeah.
And they find out that there's a bulletin board out there, or bulletin boards just in general that you can, you know, play on the internet, and they're like, wow, it's, you know, still, you know, you can still access it. Plus, as far as blind people go, I think that using a bulletin board and Telnet client is a lot easier than using the web-based games. Plus, you can play real-time with people all over the world if there's more than one people, and depending on the game. So that's kind of why I think that the bulletin boards are becoming more popular. You can also download files, if files are available, with the packages available now, like you could FTP in and download the same files that you could on the bulletin board. But it's a menu interface, it's easy to understand, and, you know, it's bringing together a people of, you know, the same, how will I say it, interest, to, you know, chat. You can do multi-node chat, which means talk with each other as you might on IRC. Or you can access other systems via Telnet and through the VES, kind of like a gateway.
Let's talk a bit about what your specific BBS is called and some of the things that you've got set up on there before we talk about the software that blind people might like to try in order to access this. So what's your BBS?
Well, my BBS was created because I'm a member of the Odyssey discussion list, which discusses gaming for the blind. And somebody said, what if we had a bulletin board that was Telnet accessible, and what if we could play games that we played a long time ago, and they missed those games, because Trade Wars, it's nothing like a real game of Trade Wars or Legend of the Red Dragon.
Yeah.
So I looked at Synchronet and I said, hey, this is not that difficult. Of course, I'm wrong. And as far as setting up goes, it went well. Then I had to try to come up with a name for the bulletin board. And since my domain name here at school is NER, which are my initials, you know, DJ Ner on ACB Radio, that's kind of my nickname. I had to come up with something that was gaming related that had those initials. So the bulletin board is called the NER BBS, N-E-R BBS, and the initials stand for Not Enough Reality, because I focus on gaming. So that's what it's called and why it became that.
So you have Trade Wars up and running on there?
Yes, I have Trade Wars. It's divided up into sections, and all of this is accessed through Telnet, but it's divided up into sections of different, like, say you go into the external programs menu. This is just for games. But you go into the external programs menu, and there are different areas of different types of games. Like, there's card games, there's space adventure and trading games, which is where you'll find Trade Wars. And then there's the most popular section, and that's the role-playing games. And most people, the most popular game I have on there is what we call Lord, because it's L-O-R-D, and we don't want to say Legend of the Red Dragon over again. So the big discussion, and around about 5 o'clock U.S. time, I've usually got 6 people playing Legend of the Red Dragon at once. And then there's also the strategic games, and those are very cool because they are like build your own civilization, basically. There's a game called Barren Realms Elite, which you are it's after some huge nuclear bomb, and you're trying to rebuild a society. This is all text-based. And you compete with other people on the bulletin board, and soon you'll be able to compete with other people around, on other bulletin board systems, and strategize as to what is the best way to build a civilization, how is the best way to attack, should I spy on this person to try to drop them around so that I can come in and send in some jet bombers, or what should I do? And there are web games that do that as well, but sometimes they're not as accessible as your speech synthesizer just reading you. You earned 50,000 gold this month, on your turn, and then you make your decisions. And that's the way with all the games that I've picked. There are ANSI games. ANSI meaning graphical games that use the arrows and things like that, that I have purposefully left out because they're not accessible. So all of the games that I put on here are very accessible, and they're quite fun to play. There's card games, Not very many of those are accessible. Card and word games, I should say. Not very many of those are accessible because they are kind of difficult to use because of the graphics. But I've found some that, like, there's a blackjack game that you can play, and there's poker, and there's a couple word games that you can play that are kind of entertaining.
One of my favorite games was a BBS door called Card Sharks, and that was an awesome game. I used to be extremely good at that. Yeah.
Right, and just like what you said, you know, people will write me and they'll be like, you know, way back, I played this game, and, you know, like you say, Card Sharks. There are resources that I can go to and find these games. So the only reason why I haven't installed, you know, 50, you know, different games is because, you know, people haven't really asked for them, requested them. When somebody does, like, you know, you've done, or, you know, something like, hey, I remember when we played, I don't know, Land of Devastation, or something like that, or I remember when I used to play, I don't know, just any game. I will go and look for it, and usually they're not very hard to install, so I just install it, because that gives people more and more options of things to do.
Actually,
with their 480 minutes a day.
I'll tell you a game that I remember that was terribly destructive. It was called Leech. Do you remember that game?
Actually another
hacking
person
game.
Mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
Was Leech, and there was Netrunner. And I'm actually planning on finding Leech and installing it, because I've heard several really good things about it. And what is it, you're a computer hacker or something?
Yes, and you have to go into people's systems and destroy. I have to somewhat ashamedly say I was exceptionally good at that game. I was
a lot
younger
then. Well,
we'll
have to get on some time and compete.
Yes. Gosh. Now, how do people access this? Obviously, they've got to use a Telnet client. And I'm interested to hear you say that, you know, that it's reasonably easy, because I haven't used Telnet for quite a while, and we went through a phase there where Windows screen readers seemed to be having a bit of a problem with Telnet clients working properly. You'd kind of get material that was scrolling up the screen repeated in the wrong places and all sorts of stuff. Have screen readers got their act together with Telnet clients these days in Windows?
Well, I think, and I don't really have any experience with WindowEyes, but as far as JAWS goes, everyone has been using a program called TerraTerm Pro. And the reason why people have been using that is because there are scripts available for JAWS to make it so that it reads the screen. Like, for instance, if the bulletin board asks you, would you like to use ANSI color? Or, you know, would you like to bomb Jonathan Mosen and, you know, cause him great pain and indifference? Then when you press Y, it automatically says, you know, whatever the outcome is. And that's important for games like the ones that I have, because sometimes time is everything. Time is, you know, are you going to survive, you know, on a particular game?
And is that a free package, or is there a registration fee?
That's a totally free package.
All right. Can you remember the website that people can go to get that package, the TerraTerm Pro?
Yes. Actually, there's a website that my friend Chris Nestrud, who's also a DJ on ACB Radio, he is CosaSoc, and we have created a webpage with the TerraTerm and the scripts, and also you can just click on the link to, and it'll Telnet you to the bulletin board if you have a Telnet client. And that address is http://www.panixpanic.com/tilde/ccn/ner. .html, node.html. And that will bring you to a page that tells you a little bit about how to access the bulletin board, has links for scripts, and also configuration help, because bulletin boards have a lot of graphical symbols that sometimes can, you know, make your screen reader go kind of crazy and speak weird things. And we've figured out a way to have TerraTerm emulate those codes so that your speech synthesizer doesn't talk all the time and say weird characters like the ANSI characters.
And when someone logs on for the first time to your board, presumably they go through a registration procedure.
Yeah, when they log on, and the telnet address is ner.uark.edu, when they telnet into that address, it comes up with a screen that says, "Welcome to the NERBABS," and it tells you what time it is, where I am, and some other information. Then it says, "Enter your username or new," and all you have to do is put in new, N-E-W, and press enter, and it will walk you through the process, and you will be able to log in and enjoy. Just, I mean, all you have to do is fill in your name and where you're from and that kind of thing, and it's real easy. There's no verification, really, that I do on my end. I just, people just have to fill it out and then read my new user file, which comes up as well.
Yeah, because, of course, in the old days, a BBS might actually log off and phone you back.
Right, and there's a program that uses email to email you a number and verify that way, but apparently it doesn't work for some reason with my configuration. I tried to get it to work, and so it wouldn't email people, so I had to take it off because they were given like 20 minutes of time rather than the correct amount of time and weren't able to verify, so I had to take that off so that people could actually use the bulletin board. But once they log in, they and get completely through the login process, the main menu comes up. And one of the cool things about Synchronet is that you have like 6 different choices of menus. Say back in the old days you liked PC Board or Wildcat. It'll ask you, what kind of shell do you want to use? And the shell means, what kind of menu do you want to use? So say you pick Wildcat, it'll look exactly like Wildcat does as far as appearance, and it has the same options. I use the Synchronet main option just because I'm used to it, but if you're more comfortable with using, say, a Renegade system or a PC Board, Synchronet will emulate that, and you won't have to remember any menu items.
The good thing about PC Board was you could basically stack your whole, if you just wanted to go in and do mail, you could basically stack your whole session on one huge command line, right from logging in to logging off.
Right, and I'm assuming that Synchronet will allow you to do that. I'm not exactly, I haven't played with the PC Board shell. But I'm pretty sure they also have a really interesting shell called MS-DOS, and it says like MS-DOS version I don't know, Synchronet version 3.0, and it gives you a C prompt, and you do like DIR, and you like, if you wanted to go into Doors, you would type doors.exe, and it's like a quasi DOS session that operates the bulletin board.
Okay. Do you have an interface that allows you to run, say, the DOS-based text adventures from within the board, for example, the Infocom games?
Yes. Actually, that is possible. I haven't implemented it yet because I have not had anybody ask, you know, and show an interest in me offering that. But it's definitely possible, and I've thought of it. One of the problems is that it would be kind of difficult to keep save file straight. Like if somebody saved a file named game and there was, another file named game that somebody else had saved, it'd be kind of difficult. So what I kind of recommend people do if they wanted to play, maybe the Infocom games would be a good one to include, but if people wanted to play other text adventures, they, download them off of the, except you can't do that with Infocom, which is the reason why I said it might be a good idea to do, but to download the free interactive fiction is what it's called, and play it that way. But yes, Synchronet does allow you to do that.
So just to recap, people can telnet into ner.uark.edu, and if they need more information, can you give us that wonderful website address again?
Sure. The address is http://www.panix.com/tilde/ccn/ner.html.
Well, I'm off there right now, and I appreciate you coming on the program and bringing back some great memories, and I wish you luck with the BBS.
Well, thanks, and if anybody logs in, has questions, I'm always there to help, and so just drop me a line or page me on the BBS, and have fun playing games.